Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a new episode of the Fashion Inside Out podcast, a podcast in which we, Institut Français de la Mode students, discuss with professors about their research subjects. We are your hosts, Claudia Chmielowiec and Samantha Torres, students in the MSc program, and today we are here with Andréane Lemieux, sustainability professor at IFM, as well as head of sustainability, IFM Caring Research Chair. We will deep dive with her today on the burning topic of circularity in fashion. Hello, Andréane. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hello, Claudia. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Andréane. Could you please present yourself quickly, tell us about your position and also your research field?
Yes. So I've been working in the industry for about almost 20 years now. Doesn't make me so young anymore. But yes, I started on the marketing side, and then I moved to China, worked on product development, went back to Montreal, worked as a buyer in ready to wear and accessories, and at that point I decided to go back to school and develop new cars for my career. And so I went back to Polytechnique Montréal to start my studies in industrial engineering that brought me in France to do my PhD on major transformation into organization, which I did in partnership with La Maison Cartier. At that time I was working for pursuing objective of performance and efficiency, especially on the time to market. So we needed to reduce at least 50% the time to market. So you can imagine that the transformation was deep through processes, organization, tools and methods, etc. And a few years ago, I had the opportunity to come back to academia, and I really wanted to make into profit all my knowledge on major transformation through a transformation that I really care about since many years now. Which is no big surprise, the sustainable transformation of our industries. IFM and Kering was looking for someone to manage a research chair on sustainability, but they wanted someone from the industry, knowing how is it on the field, and at the same time that could manage scientific research. I was luckily the right profile for them, so I joined the IFM almost 4 years ago now to really build the sustainability IFM Kering chair with two main objectives. The first one, to train all our students on concepts and values of sustainability. We believe that if we manage to transmit and to share those values to our students, the right understanding keys, they can really be change makers, and we can really create an acceleration in the industry when they enter the industry afterwards. So that's the first objective. But as you know, there's a lot of greenwashing as well in the industry. So we wanted to really develop a legitimacy on scientific base on the topic. So that's why I also manage a PhD candidate, and I myself do as well research for the sustainable transformation of our industry.
That's a very, very great. I think we're both, me and Sam, are always inspired by your classes and by you as well. I guess you agree.
Yeah, agreed completely.
So with that in mind, within the last decade, we have seen a real shift and accelerated focus on sustainability and how to integrate it into existing business models. Many brands have or are trying to shift from this linear production model to a circular one. What are the pillars of this new model?
Yes, Claudia, you were saying from the linear model to a circular model. So what do we mean in saying this? It's the linear model comes from the take, make, waste process. We take resources, we transform it, and then we throw it away. So that's really this linear process that we have been putting in place, and even more with this fast fashion increasing. Now we want to go from this linear vision to a circular vision, where the end of life becomes a new life. And that relies on three main principles. The first one is to eliminate the pollution through the entire life cycle of the product. So from the design point of view, we want to avoid as many prototypes that we want to do. In production, we manage the textile waste, by example, but the waste in general. Then in distribution, the logistics. So that's really the idea of measuring impacts and pollution. And of course, the second pillar it's to keep in use as long as possible. So the finished good, of course, but as well the fabric or the materials that can be used. So this phase of use is very important, and that's where we're going to also integrate the idea of re-employment, reuse, upcycling, and all the levers we can put in place to really keep in use. And then the third pillar of circular economy or circularity in general is to regenerate the natural system, which means that we want to repair, in a way, the resources and the space on the planet that we earthed through our industry. So sometimes it's maybe further this regenerative approach, but this is where we can put levers from the end of life that becomes a new life from a product point of view, but also from an environmental point of view. I'm thinking about regenerative agriculture, by example, that is totally in line with circularity. To conclude, I mean, the circularity, the total vision relies on those three principles. Then the implementation can be step by step, and you can integrate in within your business different transformation levers or circular levels through your business at different point of the product life cycle, of course.
So jumping off what you said, could you please explain a bit more in depth why the circular business model is so important and also how brands are implementing this change?
Well, it is so important, and I'm not the only one saying it, because the Ellen MacArthur Foundation actually has the same speech. We believe that circular economy is the only economy compatible with growth. And actually, the Ellen MacArthur Foundation goes much further on the speech. They say that if you don't implement circular economy or circularity principles in your business model today, you won't survive the next 20 years. So it's quite strong. Why this vision? Because, of course, the supply chains will evolve. I mean, with global warming, with as well as geopolitical context that will evolve. If you don't capitalize on the actual resources that we have in the pipes right now, I mean, we won't be able to survive. The resources won't be available like it is today. So if we don't put in place what we need in terms of multiplying the use cycles and supply chains for recycling, offer and propose new resources that won't be available if we refer to the natural resources, well, we won't be able to grow and even, they say, to survive. So that's really the important thing about circular economy. So how to implement it now, how to like start or continue what you have in progress in circularity. There's many ways to attack it or to see it. I was talking about the product life cycle. Of course, you can look at it on the different stages in terms of eco-design, by example, at the beginning. How do you integrate end of life in your design already? Can you dismantle the product easily for recycling, by example? Is it monomaterial? And for that, of course, you need database. You need the life cycle assessment, product referential to manage the impact, but that's the whole entire idea of eco design. Then, in terms of production, but you might want to have it closer to manage the waste. I was talking about to eliminate pollution and waste through the entire process. So, do you want to go in some countries that are decarbonized, by example? So, that contributes as well to circularity. Then, for the phase of retail and distribution, you might want to integrate new type of services as well in your business to develop like the secondhand market or the circular fashion market that we say it more generally. Or do you develop renting, swapping, those new terms that are like emerging more and more in our industry? Then, and obviously I'm not exhaustive on all the examples, it's just to give you understanding keys, but in the use phase, can you reuse the product from different customers, but as well, can you transform it? How is it easy to repair it? And for a brand, by example, do you propose those after sales services to enhance the lifespan of the product? And at the end of life, how do we manage our textile waste? Maybe you want want to deep dive in that topic, but I was in Ghana 4 weeks ago. Ghana is the biggest importer of textile waste in the world, but I'm talking about Ghana, but now we have many documentaries seeing the same situation in Chile, in Kenya, in Indonesia. I mean, let's say that it's a situation in Global South generally, okay? But I'm going to talk of Ghana because I was there like physically a month ago. They receive 15 million garments every week. In terms of quantity, it's just crazy when you see that. In Accra, the capital, there's only depletion of 2 million. So it means that every week you could distribute 5 garments to every person in Accra. So the idea of saying we're sending to the south clothes to help, it's, totally unrealistic. I mean, it's not the case. It's way too much. And above the fact that there's huge quantities, 30% of it, 40%, goes to trash directly. So either to landfills or to the ocean. And I saw it myself. I went on the beach and the tentacles of 12 meters long, 1 meter deep. So the conversation about the end of life and waste management, and if you go back in the life cycle to use and use as much as possible, I mean, it's the conversation we must have today. Of course, we need to eco-design to support this, but we will need to address the consequences of the overconsumption and overproduction. And that's why I'm saying the situation of textile waste in Global South is the Rana Plaza of our decade.
With that in mind, as you mentioned, you know, these brands are trying to transition, and you gave some examples. But I'm very interested in that case. You talked about also the idea of overconsumption. Do you think that that is a big pillar as well as something that's hard to transition? Because since brands want to profit, obviously you have to create more items to sell. It leads to overconsumption and it's a whole cycle. So do you think that's the biggest problem that brands are having with transitioning to this more circular business model? Or is it also touching elsewhere?
No, but the question behind your question, Claudia, is how do we stretch? I mean, how do we reduce the model? I mean, we must shrink the volumes before even talking about durability or circularity. This is the first point, and this is really the biggest questions the brands have to ask themselves. And I agree, it is a very difficult question, but how do we shrink the volumes in keeping the growth model? And that's why I'm saying circular economy is the only model compatible with growth, because with the circular economy, you develop new ways to create profit in the new way of retailing and the new way of distribution and the new way you develop services for the use phase and even the new way to support the end of life to become a new life. If you don't support the collaboration and the establishment of standards to manage waste to enter recycling supply chain, as a brand, you won't have the resources available in the next years to design your product. So really the first question to ask is how do we make evolve the business model in terms of volume? And then we're going to talk about durability, environmental and social footprint. I mean, all the discussion about labeling today at the European level, what we call the PEF, the product environmental footprint, but as well in France here with the anti-waste for circular economy law that was voted in 2020 and will be on the labeling normally applied in January 24. So the ecology minister just announced a few weeks ago 8 criteria that will be used for the calculation of the impact. In the next week will be again discussion and an approval of a methodology to calculate the environmental impact in order to have in January 24, we will have an environmental score on the product. So hopefully it's a way to influence consumption. You were talking about overconsumption. I often say that the responsibility is distributed from the institution. Yes, we need all those regulations and norms to the private sector. They need to ask the right question. They must transform internally on what am I going to do? Am I going to contribute? And then the citizen, the customer, we all have to ask ourselves, what do we want to wear? Of course, I believe, and that's my point of view, that fashion will stay. I mean, we won't just wear clothes just for protecting ourselves because of the rain or the cold. Or no, it's a way to express. But I really think that what's already out there in terms of resources and in terms of finished goods, even if you look at the secondhand market in general or vintage more especially, you have a lot already to get from that. So all this ecosystem and all these distributed responsibility must, like, we cannot just wait from the private sector or from the laws or from the consumer that will change his habits. We must, like, really go at the same time, simultaneously. And, I mean, we have to start somewhere. I mean, we want to be part of the solution. If we're not, we're part of the problem.
So just to sum up what you said before, so it's not a macro to micro level change and shift. It's really at the same time, as you mentioned, these three institutions. So it would be governments, the private sector, and the consumer that have to step all together in order to find solutions to the problems that we're facing right now.
A third of the responsibility, yes.
And also in terms of profit, what would this mean to the brands? Because if we think of fast fashion, this whole circular business that you explained doesn't really fit into their model. So what is your vision for the future of fast fashion as well?
Offer the profit another way, from new services or a new type of product. And for the fast fashion, I agree with you, Sam. It's not aligned with their values as it is today. But what we see is some of the fast fashion groups are already trying to develop new ways to do business as well. Maybe not with the front brand that we all know, but with other smaller brands that they have within the group that are, like, experimental for some levers on secondhand or renting, on the collecting and sorting as consumer. But this, I'll say it carefully, because the post-consumer is today the network of secondhand or post-consumer waste. When you donate, I mean, I was talking about Ghana. The 15 million of garments are coming from the post-consumer, but as well from businesses that are supposed to donate. And actually, they donate, but once sorted, it's sold to the South. Because when I say they receive 15 million, it's there's intermediary importers that buy from the North the 50 kg balls of garments. You don't know what's in it. It has been sorted, but you know it's polos or dresses, but that's it. And then those importers sell those 50 kg balls to retailers in the market in Cantamanto, but it would be the same in other South countries. So when I was talking about the 30% that goes directly to waste, I mean to trash, it's when they open the balls that discover if they can resell it or reuse it or recycle it to finance their investment. And I don't want to be so negative, because yes, I truly am telling you it was very difficult to see all this, like the situation, the ecological and the social condition as well. But what can be inspiring is the topic also of the episode is circularity. What I saw there is they develop initiative at small scales, but also large scale of circular economy initiative that works. What we are thinking here, oh, we're going to do an upcycle capsule of 25 pieces. It takes like 6 months to develop because we're not sure about the aesthetic, or what are we going to source the fabric and et cetera, et cetera. There, I mean, they upcycle 25 million garments every month from the Cantamanto market.
That's crazy. That's absolutely wonderful to hear, as you said, something so inspiring to, you know, have these quote unquote fashion problems that in other places they are able to rapidly find solutions towards.
You know, under constraint, you find solution. We have here, I'm sorry to say here, but I mean, Global North, again, I'll say it like this, but we have so many privileges that we feel that we have time, we feel that we have resources, but them, it's a question to survive. if they don't do anything with what they bought, they invested, because, I mean, when I say they buy, I mean, they invest one ball of 50 kg is about 450 euros. So for someone, I mean, it's a huge investment for them. So when you open it first, if you discover that you just lost 90% of your investment because you're not going to be able to do anything because it's polyester and nobody wants to wear polyester when it's 40 degrees outside, or if it's stained and it stinks, I mean, even if you wash it, it won't go away. You lost your investment. So how are you going to capitalize on the 10% left that you have? But you will really find solution, and you will work with the guy in front of you and the girl that knows how to do embroidery, to embellish the piece, and the printer guy, and all those people in a solidarity manner. They manage to make beautiful pieces that was trash before. So that's really inspiring, and I hope we'll be able to be really vocal on this. I mean, it's part of our research. That was one point that we went there. It was really to understand their point of view on durability. I was talking about polyester now. A lot of instances in the North say that polyester is a sustainable material because you can recycle it almost at the infinite. Okay, maybe, but if you have the recycling facilities, yeah, and if you have the right supply chains to sort it and to like feed those recycling facilities, it's not the case. If you look at the physical flows of textile waste, that's 90% or maybe even more, 95% goes to south. It's not the case. It's not sustainable. When it arrives, it goes directly to trash, so directly to the ocean. So don't even think about microplastic. It's like just decomposing directly on the beach and where the turtles wants to put their eggs, and they cannot anymore because they cannot dig into polyester. So that's really the thing we wanted to have. It's to challenge the perspectives of durability in the North, because we really think that we can put some topic to bring new angles on many topics. That's an example of material, but as well, all the indigenous communities integrate durability as well in their culture since like ever. We can look into techniques in Japan to repair, to embellish the objects. So all those levers, and we're talking about circularity here. Durability is one of the pillars, of course. We say how to keep in use, so we can think about the physical durability, but as well, we call it the extrinsic durability. And my student Esther Vanacker from the same program as you're doing is starting a PhD on this, and she wrote a scientific paper on this, on the different dimensions of durability, and she really share and present that durability should be analyzed in a different way than just physical, what we call intrinsic durability. The extrinsic durability is really about the aesthetic part, the emotional link, the social link between the person and the clothing. So we find, and Esther is very direct on this, that it's very dangerous to consider only the physical part of durability. Very dangerous if we integrate this criteria only in that perspective within the environmental impact or the circular economy implementation.
So now at IFM and fashion schools, I think we can see each time a movement of more people trying to buy in a more sustainable way, or making sure the brands they buy from are more circular or take more care of how they are sourcing their products. Do you think this is a reality between most consumers, or do you think this will be a new trend which will trickle down in some way?
No, but it's true that when you come to IFM, it's because you're passionate by fashion. Okay, so I never met someone at IFM not passionate from fashion. But the thing is, it's since you're passionate, you deep dive usually in the topic, so you get aware quite easily that the industry has an impact. So that creates, I think, an energy and a switch as well in terms of habits. And this evolution, I saw it. actually growing in the past 4 years with the since we created the chair. Really, this commitment to sustainable fashion here at IFM is much stronger. The thing is, I think it's a bit a niche, unfortunately, and that's why I believe it's so important to train the students here to accelerate the transformation in the industry, but at all levels as well, in terms of marketing and communication, and not to fall into greenwashing, but real action and change management on the entire value chain within I was talking about the private sector, so within the organization, but as well with the population and the customer. Because today, unfortunately, we can, of course, I'm in the sustainability every day, so I'm very amazed, and I get this power from all the positive people, the change makers that I meet every day, of course. And that's why I still do my job and I still love my job. But at the same time, we see ultra fast fashion opening stores and growing to the web. I mean, how is it possible? So it means that we need to shift that as well. And the influence, when we look at the objective, by example, the 2 tons, the Paris Agreement, and we look at the objective 2 tons by human for 2050, that's the objective of the Paris Agreement. We say that, yes, you have different solutions to put in place, very concrete, but the influence is at least 30% of the transformation change, okay, the transformation level. So the influence to share this information around you to your friends and family, to get involved in association, to do trainings, to animate workshops within the school, but within your job, your internships, to get active in NGOs, or to get active in politics as well. This is influence, and they say that this is at least the third of the change.
So we talked about the idea of influence, and you know, you gave us some propositions on what can be done when it comes to education. But do you have, let's just call it, you know, the top three advice when it comes to how to commence this journey when it comes to circularity within our own lives?
If we look at consumption before buying a new clothes, do I have something similar in my wardrobe? This is the first question. I mean, the less impact is what you already have. Can I be a personal shopper of my wardrobe, and can maybe ask, can I swap some pieces with my friends? I mean, here we're in a fashion school, but maybe some other friends that are not in a fashion school would like to have some of your pieces, and you can mix and match. In general, to avoid overconsumption, if you really want to have a piece, because you had this idea that you needed this lace blouse, but look into vintage and secondhand. I mean, there are so many things existing already. Of course, it takes some time maybe to curate it, but you have some now some offers to website that are already doing the job for you to curate all those pieces. And third, if you have to buy new, please ask the question, what is the material, where it comes from? Even ask the brand or the store, do you have an idea of the environmental impact, how it's made, the social impact as well? So all those questions, be curious about upstream. And if I can add a fourth lever, finally, if you want to give away your clothes, because I've been asked because of the global voice situation a lot in the South, first, try to give it to people you know to be sure that it's not thrown away. And I mean, this entire traceability or give it to people that can manage the downstream traceability, which is not necessarily everywhere that they offer to give the clothes.
Great. We'll be implementing that for sure.
So to finish off, we have our must-have question, which is, what is your favorite part of the journey of your research?
But the research I do with the students I manage, we do transformation research. So it's to be on the field, and it's really to contribute to the transformation. If it's not going to be useful it's not interesting. So really, it's when we develop tools or methodologies or new frameworks, new referential, it's really to contribute to the transformation. That's the part of the research that really animates me. And of course, it's when I see all the work we do, it's not necessarily research, but it's really the work that the students do in their project and the way they want to transform the industry to commit to the change, because we all believe that the industry, the fashion industry, has the power to change. Actually, the motto of the chair and my motto, it's let's go change the world. It's really because we believe that it's possible, and we are an industry that can really lead the change for other sectors as well.
Well, thank you so much, Andrian, for your time and for your energy. We are always so pleased to hear what you have to say. So we're happy to share this also with our listeners here today. And thank you to you, the listeners. If you are curious to discover new content, stay tuned to the next episode of Fashion Inside Out. And if you want to learn more, please go to us at IFM on Instagram and Twitter.